I give you Paul H. from Traxton.
I wasn't expecting this microphone thing. My name is Paul, and I am an alcoholic.
Paul.
It's an honor, actually, to be here this evening, to think that I would be speaking to alcoholics, for one thing, and or people who maybe don't think they're alcoholics, but they happen to be here is, you know, to me it's kind of special. And it's an honor, like I said. I started out with alcohol with a bang. I was 6 years old and went to my uncle's wedding, and they had drinks everywhere, and they had all these Manhattans that had all these little umbrellas in them and whatnot, you know. And those were really eye-catching, you know, to a young kid, you know. I want one of those. And next thing I know, I'd had about 11 or 12 of those things. And then the little kid started to spin and wheel, and he was off to the races, and the adults thought that was very amusing and whatnot, you know. And eventually, I got wound up so much I passed right out, and they had to carry me out and put me into the car to go to sleep. It was a hell of a wedding, or so I'm told, or what I remember of it. I do remember, though, that I liked it. I had a good time. And right off the bat, too, I liked the fact that I was getting attention from people older than me, you know, from other adults and whatnot. And so that was pretty cool. And that's pretty much the way I stayed. I went into high school, hip, slick, and cool. You know, I grew up in the 60s, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I subscribed to that theory, and although originally when I started my so-called quest, I was in fact looking for something more in my life. You know, I heard there was the so-called hippie movement going on, and you know, peace, love, and whatnot, and it followed a rather spiritual line, and so, you know, I wanted to get a little mescaline and psilocybin and mushrooms and those funny green things that tasted so bad, those peyote buttons, worst thing I've ever eaten in my life. But I ate them. So I got the desired effect, you know, and always had my buddy alcohol to chase him down, but it was just beer drinking, and, you know, I thought beer drinking was just, this was something you did. When we were growing up, I had two brothers and a sister, and I should have thought that something was different when we had to break my dad's beer bottles up, those quarts, so that we could get them in the garbage to carry them out to the street. Those damn things weighed 300 pounds by the time we hauled them to the street. Because my dad drank a lot of beer. And, in fact, he finally then moved to a keg. And that was really cool, because I could steal beer and nobody would know how much I got. Which is what we did all the time. And my dad, I loved my dad, and he loved me. And he kind of condoned a lot of my behavior. He kind of thought it was funny when he'd have to pick me up at the police station at 3 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, that was that was okay too, you know. I mean, I didn't get my ass whooped like I really should have. But I pushed it because I pushed everybody. That's what I did, is because all I could see was me. You know, I lived in a room full of mirrors, you know, and that's all I knew. And, you know, it came to my attention that perhaps I was drinking a little too much. And this didn't occur till I was really in my late 20s. So I'd already had a pretty good head start of 12 years or more of some pretty good usage. But that didn't stop me, and I rationalized it away, just like my father said, if you work, you support your family, you know, and you have the right to relax. Well, I knew how to relax all right. I could get off with the best of them. And I did. Yeah, I had my fun. But I also paid the price of alienation and distance from my wife, some friends. You know, you do some really crazy stuff when you get really good and drunk. And, you know, I didn't pay any attention. To me, it was okay to wreck cars, you know. And I mean, I wreck cars all the time. I flip them over and whatnot. I'm just drunk. Well, didn't get arrested. So it was okay. Because I didn't get caught. Some people get caught all the time. And I was just one of those guys that just never seemed to get caught. Should have been busted all the time. But I didn't. Well, one thing led to another, and I finally had a motorcycle accident in July of 91 while my wife was pregnant with my daughter Melody, who is here tonight. And I broke about every bone in my body. I broke my leg in 6 places. I had screws, 5 or 6 screws in my leg, my right ankle, my left wrist had a plate, broke my shoulder. I broke about everything. Broke 11 ribs. And lost 6 pints of blood and had 100 stitches. Barely made it to the hospital alive. And in my insanity, was screaming in ICU for them to operate on me. Now, what fool is going to sit there and scream for them to bring it on? Let's operate. And this nurse, I'll never forget this. This nurse looked at me, and she said, "Honey, you know, God didn't finish with you yet." And he wasn't, and I'm grateful for that. But I never did. You'd think that would have been a wake-up call, okay? I almost wasn't alive to see the birth of my daughter. Leave my wife a widow, I didn't get it. What I got out of it was I drank more and a Vicodin habit, because I had a lot of pain issues. So as my daughter was growing up, as she became 4 or 5 years old, I got into another binge kind of a thing. I mean, I drank beer every day, and not like regular people, I drank at least a 12-pack. I mean, 12-pack was minimum. And, you know, then I started medicating along with that, and my wife came to me and said, "You're going to do something about this." And, of course, I wanted to tell her to blow, you know, forget it, you know, I'm fine, leave me alone. She said, "You know, if I divorce you, you'll never see your daughter again. And you don't know my wife." But I knew she meant every word she said, and that the fear of me not seeing my daughter was enough to make me want to do something to appease my wife and make everybody happy. So I heard talk about these AA meetings, and I thought, you know what, this is perfect. I want to go, I'll go check out a couple of meetings, you know. Tell her I graduated, and, you know, it's all good, you know. And that's what I did. So I made the mistake of raising my hand at that first meeting. And, you know, I didn't know anything about AA. And next thing I know, every person that's sharing is looking at me. And when they're telling some horror story or something, I go, "Oh my God, it's a cult. I gotta get the hell out of here quick." And that's what I thought. Yeah. And I did. I was not back for a while. And then I happened to run into the gal that told me about that meeting. And I said, "What's going on with these people?" You know, I told her what happened. And she said, "Oh my God, look, please, go, just go back. Just shut up and don't raise your hand and just listen, you know." I don't know if I can do that. Alright, okay. So I did. I came back. And I assure you I didn't say anything. But I heard something. I started to hear the truth of people's words in relation to alcohol, in relation to my life, in relation to spirituality. And I kept coming back. And by the grace of God, I got it. I was, you know, I just got lucky. God said, "You're getting a pass on this one, kid." And I heard God, as I understand Him, through people in these meetings. And that's where I get my wisdom and my connection to my higher power. And funny thing happened. I started to be happy again and to change. And I was blessed and was fortunate enough to get the message. And for a long time, I just I didn't really understand the program thing, but I understood that I was getting something very powerful out of these meetings, and that I liked it. But I didn't really set out to boom, you know, let's get to work on the steps or any of that kind of thing. It took me a while. And then I realized, I started to understand what they meant. You know, At first I just would read them, you know, or I'd hear them read and whatnot, and, you know, I'm like, okay, I've got 2 college degrees. I understand what they're saying, you know. But then I started to feel it and realized that there's no way that a lot of the people that I had become friends with and that I gained wisdom and heard the message from, they all had one thing in common. And that is that they worked the program. And that the program worked. And the proof was in the pudding. So I set out to work the steps. And I had a rough time with that 4-step thing. And, you know, I put that off for a while. And then the funny thing is, it doesn't matter what I think. It's what matters is the results of the program. And through doing the few simple things. See, I didn't know that I needed an instruction guide on how to live. I didn't know that. I thought I had that all down. But I didn't. I needed those instructions on how to, you know, get along and live a productive life with people and what. And it all unfolds for me through the steps and the fellowship of the program. Without action, you're not, you know, results, of course, are going to be nil. It's an action program. You got to take action if you want results. It's like that. It's like anything in life. But the payoff here is beyond my wildest dreams. I had no idea how good my life could be. You know, I thought I did, but I was clueless. And I am able now to enjoy my daughter's company, and I'm still married. And I'm still plugging. I've seen a lot of the promises. I still need to work 10, 11, and 12. These things happen, and those results occurred. I was feeling good, and I was able to make peace with my parents. They saw me sober, and then they passed. Both of them passed quickly, within a year. And my mother was visiting us 2 weeks for Christmas before she passed in early January. What a gift. You know? I mean, and she knew I was sober. She used to joke about it, you know, you got to go to these meetings? I mean, why are you, you know? Because I'd go to her house in Kansas City and I found a meeting. And I'll tell you, there's meetings everywhere you can go, and they're always great. And that was a great group in KC. And the point I'm making is that I was able to, through the program, get rid of some wreckage of my past with my folks, and to know with certainty that they knew I was sober and on the right path. And that means a lot to me as a person. And then life couldn't have gotten much better. And I bought a new house and was working hard. And got a hernia from picking a stump up because the garbage man wouldn't throw it in the back of their garbage truck because they wanted me to feed them some extra cash for doing their own job, and that really pissed me off. So I picked the stump up and was thrown in there, and I got a hernia from my trouble. And I went in to go get the hernia fixed, and I'm sitting there on the gurney, and the surgeon comes out to me, and he goes, "Okay, we're all set to go here today." He goes, I saw a little something in your blood work there. You're going to need to go see an oncologist as soon as we do this procedure." And I'm like, "Huh?" And he put the mask on my face. And sure enough, I did go see a hematologist, and I came up with lymphoma. Actually, it took a month to figure out what it was, and that was the worst part, was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And without this program, the serenity that it gave me and the strength that it gave me, I know I wouldn't be here. I mean, there's just no way. It took them a long time. They finally basically said, "Well, this is what we think it is, but we got to do something." So it was put up or shut up, and I said, "Okay." So they took my spleen and my gallbladder, and that was in 2001. And it seemed like, well, that I went into remission, and I was grateful. And you know, we as alcoholics have what we've heard referred to as our built-in forgetter, you know. And I just kind of forgot I had cancer, you know. I was feeling good, and I was in remission, and I just kind of forgot about it. But it decided to rear its head again, and which they told me it would, and it did in 06. And I remember very well, they really nuked the hell out of me, and I had some complications, and about didn't make it. But I remember looking up from my bed, and there was my friends from Triangle. You know, I'd wake up, and I'm waking up from these tubes hooked to this machine that's draining all this fluid off me. And there's guys I go to meetings with, you know, hanging out. And I'm semi-conscious, and they're just smiling. Sitting there, and I'm like, this is weird, you know. This is different. But you know what? They were there, and then I'll never forget this as long as I live. My good friend, Steve P., we were in my bed. My daughter, my wife, and I were all crashed in my hospital bed. It had been a rough day. I'd been in the hospital for going on 50 days because I'd had a problem with fluid in my lungs. So we were all just crashed, and Steve P. came in and leaned over, and he smiled at me, and he said, "I love you," and he came down and he kissed me. And it was the most powerful thing. I don't know, it was very special to me. I gained a lot of strength and hope from that, and you know, by the grace of God, he pulled me out again. So I've been through my share of problems in sobriety, but you know what? I haven't had a drink. I have never actually really thought about it. I mean, you know, a couple times I'll look and see that, you know, think a beer might be fun. I'm like, where did that come from? You know, I know that. I can't drink a beer. One beer leads to 2 beers, leads to 10 beers, leads to 20 beers. And that's just the way I operate. The program has given me my life, and I now have more friends and people that I can count on, and the love of my family who supports me. And I guess that's it in a nutshell. You know what? AA saved my ass. And if I got what I deserved, okay, I wouldn't be sitting here. So I know that for me, that God has a plan. And part of that plan is to tell people that there really is hope. You know, there really is love. And you have to have faith. And a lot of that stems from when I surrendered and accepted the fact that I'm in the right place. And I would have never said that before, because this is not something I wanted to be part of. So, with that, I guess I'm going to pass it on and just let you know that I love you. And I hope that every one of you has an opportunity to walk the walk, talk the talk. Thanks.
Help, Mr. Wizard.